Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ultra Q minus one. The one is red. It's me, Rosin, and I am joined by Mel. Hello, Mel.
Hey, what if you went to Silent Hill, but instead of Pyramid Head, you saw Godzilla?
That'd be messed up, and I'd also shake my fist at the fate of the world that my war is not yet over. It's never over.
Well, so I was gonna have a follow up. I can help with it. So yes. So
yeah, we saw Godzilla minus one, which recently came out in theaters over in North America here, and
I saw it yesterday.
I saw it like 2 days ago. I don't know. Time is an illusion. I slept until 1 p.m. today. I thought I was late for recording our podcast. It turns out I was a day early, in fact. But yeah, we decided to just record this as its own separate thing because we both have a lot to say, I think, and we liked this movie a lot, and we did not want to subject Red to us talking about it for probably a very extended period of time. And also, this gives us more freedom to just talk about the movie in totality. I think we're going to go full spoilers on this, but I guess even before we go into that, I think it's safe to say that we both really loved this movie from what it sounds like.
Yeah, I like this. Also, we don't want to, like, spoil a movie in, like, the first hour of our main show. So, you know.
Yeah.
Coordinating it off. Not like, G-Wit style, this would be a separate upload, but you already know that because you listen to this.
Yeah, I think this is my new favorite kaiju movie. Like, just driving back home from the theater, I was like, I think this is my new number one.
Oh, what? You don't like Battle in Outer Space, the movie that I'm sure you've definitely seen by now?
Listen, after uncovering the history of its creator, I kind of shelved that one for a little bit.
Listen, I will forgive you because we're doing this instead. However, yeah. However, we do need to get to that at some point, mostly because I mostly have forgotten the movie by this point. Not that there's much to remember, but
I was about to say, maybe that's just more indicative than anything we could possibly say about it, because sometimes that's how movies are. So yeah, Godzilla Minus One was directed by Takashi Yamazaki, who I am not personally familiar with, but I laughed my ass off when I learned that he is also the guy who did Dragon Quest Your Story, a movie I have still not seen and I am not sure if I want to see, considering what I know about it. And it's based on a game I really like a lot. sounds like it received quite the poor reception when it came out because of the choices they made with the adaptation. So, also did the live-action Parasite movie, which I didn't know existed, to be completely honest with you.
I thought the movie was South Korean. This is a joke.
Yeah. but yeah, this is technically, we were talking about this before the podcast started. This is being considered by Toho the franchise's fifth film of the Reiwa era, starting with Shin Godzilla, even though that was technically Heisei. But it's being counted. It's rolling forward because sometimes they're a little bit rough about these things. And I feel like if you're gonna make like a natural breaking off point, I feel like Shin Godzilla is a good place to make it. Just in terms of tone and theme and what it's going for. It's definitely a departure from the movies that it came out prior to that. And then there's also the three Netflix anime
The Gainer Obuchi trilogy.
Yeah.
Which I hear are terrible.
I have not heard great things about either. So, so yeah, this is the fifth one of those, I guess, if we're breaking it down like that. And I would say that it's safe to say that this is a movie that is definitely in conversation with both the original and also Shin Godzilla. I saw in the Abnormal Mapping Discord that people were discussing that apparently, I hadn't seen this personally, but apparently there had been in the weeks leading up to this movie some discussion that this was, like, supposed to be in continuity with Shin Godzilla, or they were, the marketing people were hyping up the connection between the two.
I remember
which,
that being
seeing
a thing
the movie.
I just remember that around the time of announcements.
Okay.
That they were alluding to that.
Seeing the movie, I think, personally, I don't know if it's, like, considered connected or not by the people who made it. I think this movie doesn't work if it's actually connected to Shin Godzilla. Neither of these really, I feel like, act as if the other had happened.
I definitely feel like this is standalone, but also it's been a long time since I've seen Shin Godzilla. But also I can see how, like, the stinger of the ending can just be like, oh yeah, you just get Shin Godzilla guy out of this somehow. But, like, in a way that doesn't actually matter.
Yeah. I think this movie just works better in a vacuum. Earnestly. I really adore how... If Shin Godzilla is a movie about crisis and the failure of the forces that we believe in to protect us during crisis, or not believe in necessarily, but we expect to have a response for when shit hits the fan, and dealing with the failure of that. This is a movie about ruination, is kind of my takeaway, and dealing with the trauma of just living in the aftermath of annihilation and picking up the pieces afterwards and figuring out who you are and what to do with your life. And this movie leaves off on such an optimistic note while also understanding and accepting the fact that things are never still going to be the same, and this is a weight that you will probably carry with you forever, but in spite of that, you can find an inner peace. I have seen this a few different times from people, and it made me feel better about, I guess feel better is a weird way to put it, but I got, like, emotional watching this, and I've seen a lot of people today who are coming out and seeing the showing that they had just be like, I straight up cried, and I can see it. Like, the found family drama side of this works great.
A really strong one. We can get to more into specifics later, but yeah, I've definitely seen people, like, we're still pecking away at, like, you know, as we alluded to earlier, the older Godzilla slash Toho Kaiju backlog ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we still need to, we haven't seen the depths it has gone, but I have seen people saying that this is the most human drama a Godzilla movie has been, and I can kind of see that in the way it feels really like a human drama where also Godzilla's here, but as much as Godzilla is a literal kaiju in this movie, it's also like, it also is like more spiritually represents the protagonist's,
yeah,
like his emotional state kind of thing, like his inner demons.
Yes, and what I adore about it too is because there's two ways to go with Godzilla, and I would even argue it's just one way that Godzilla is in many ways something we've talked about on Ultra Q before. If you've listened to us talk about kaiju stuff,
we talk about kaiju stuff on our podcast. That's crazy.
I know. It is simultaneously a synthesis of the American nuclear threat and what that means for the world, while also being an avatar of nature and a reminder that humanity. The Earth has existed long before humanity, and it will more likely than not continue to exist far longer after we kick the bucket as well. And kind of dealing with nature as a force unto itself that we are kind of at the mercy of. And the latent horror that comes with that as well, and what happens when we tamper with it and disrespect it.
Oh boy, is that in this movie.
Yes, but like, What blew me away was taking that nuclear metaphor, and it felt, Godzilla to me in this movie felt like a broader avatar of just the horror of World War II writ large, while still obviously keeping the nuclear imagery of, like, the bombings.
Yeah, that said, it does I did, in a weird way, feel like the nuclear aspect was more understated than you expect from Godzilla in a movie
talking about
World War II. Because, like, so we haven't done, like, a full thought summary of the movie yet. Well, I guess we can get to that more or less later. But, like, just, like, the movie starts in, like, the last days of the war. And we never get... The only atomic bomb reference we really get is the one in the Bikini Atoll by the U.S., which is, like, basically what turns Godzilla into... Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was interesting from that point, just like the nuclear aspect is just in not in the forefront in a way that's usually associated with Godzilla.
Yeah, I was surprised by that myself, but I respect the decision because it's still there enough to satisfy me. I do think that's an angle that shouldn't ever really be like absent, but the way he discusses Godzilla, Koichi, our protagonist, with his fellow survivor turned eventual love interest Noriko, is that he still has his war to fight. Or I guess he doesn't. I don't think he necessarily says it. At some point, he says something like, "I can't love her because I still have my own personal battle."
His war is not over.
Yes, his war is not over. And that just I adored every aspect of that.
Yeah.
There's a point where he just breaks down and like loses complete sense of reality, and he is not sure if he's still alive or if Noriko is even a dream. Like how can someone who is so nice to him and brings him so much joy exist within this horrible world where so much bad things have happened to him? And I'm not a veteran, I've never fought in a fucking war, I've never been in combat in my life, but just as someone with general PTSD, that scene was very well written to me, where it's just like, I can relate a little too close to home with what this guy is feeling, of just like, sometimes you have those really grim moments of like, I need someone to snap me out of this.
Yeah, like, actual PTSD, not like, Puss in Boots.
Listen, this is the first Godzilla movie with the realistic depiction of a panic attack. Add it to the gallery of good media with their panic attack depictions. I guess we should provide a basic summary.
Yeah, we're kind of just like grasping or whatever, but maybe like going step through a step will give us something to ground us a bit more.
So
we don't have to summarize it all. We can just pick away at it as we go. But you know.
Yes. So our boy Koichi is a young kamikaze pilot who lands at an Odo Island. I have the Wikipedia open for repairs. However, all of the mechanics looking at his plane go, "Well, that's interesting. I actually don't think anything's wrong with this plane." And he kind of gets called out on the fact that he just doesn't want to go and die. What's the fucking point? Everyone there knows that they are going to lose the war. His death will not change anything. A fellow mechanic points this out and talks to him and goes, "I don't blame you." As they sleep on this conundrum, fucking adolescent teenage Godzilla attacks the island. Looking as small as I've ever seen him.
Yeah, so this is interesting to me because, like, so first of all, it's like Godzilla is basically real Jurassic Park energy here with, like, it's just a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
And dinosaur-sized. It actually reminds me a bit of, I don't know if you've seen it, but, like, a couple years ago, there was the Godzilla anime Singular Point.
No, I have not. I have not seen Singular Point.
With the exception of Godzilla, funny enough, the kaiju in that show are more, like, large animal dinosaur size, and so there's sort of, like, the feeling of the combat, or like the feeling of the encounters, there is some combat because they have a jet jaguar robot and it's funny. But yeah, the encounters of the kaiju are still threatening, but there is like sort of it almost feels more intimate when they're that size, when they're like, you know, fighting elephant size versus like fighting like a building size, which is crazy.
It feels like, yeah, like you said, Jurassic Park is, I think, the comparison, like that is a perfect comparison. But like enough so that it doesn't feel like, oh God, we need, like, it doesn't have that air of sudden, complete doom and desolation that you get later on in the movie and in other Godzilla stuff, to the point where they're like, hey, go to your plane, it has guns on it, we can kill this thing. I don't think that would have worked, but it doesn't matter, because Koichi chooses not to shoot, he panics. Yeah.
So we'll get into this later, but there is like a feeling of like, there is a conflation of this event with like, his, like association and conflation of this event with like his refusal to go kamikaze.
Yes.
And I'm sort of like 50-50 on how that feels to me, but we can talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess we can talk about it now. We'll talk about it later. Because it'll matter more when we get to, like, when he gets back home anyway.
Yeah. Okay. I put a pin in that because I do actually want to talk about that, because I also had some feelings about it, but I walked out pretty positive. Koichi returns to Tokyo. Everything is destroyed.
We should talk about how, like, everyone fucking died.
Everyone died except for him on that island Tachibana, the lead mechanic, who is also the one that pointed out to him, your fucking plane, there's nothing wrong with it, you're just being a coward, you don't want to die for the war.
His reaction to everyone being dead is not exactly good. Very hostile to fuck, I forgot his name.
Koichi,
yeah.
Yeah, he believes if Koichi shot his shot, Godzilla would have died and everyone would have been saved.
Yeah, and he even, like, as he's taking the boat back to Japan, he gives him, like, the envelope of the photos of all the mechanics.
Which Koichi will continue to hold on to for the remainder of this movie. And constantly look at low points to feel that weight of, could I have possibly saved these people? Koichi returns to Tokyo, which is shot like a post-apocalyptic disaster movie. Everything is destroyed. There is like no structure that is complete. Everything is at least a little bit like run down or obliterated in like some capacity. Nothing has four standing walls. Everyone's living in these little shacks just trying to get by.
Casino. Firebombings.
Firebombings that more likely than not took the lives of his parents. He reconnects with his neighbor, who absolutely blames him and men like him for the loss of the war and everything being as horrible and bad as it is.
Yeah. This is maybe around the part where I want to take the pin out. Or should you keep it in for a bit?
You can take it out now.
Yeah, because like it's the conflation of, there's a conflation between Koichi, you know, abandoning his kamikaze duty, and like his not firing of the gun at Godzilla, and you see in both cases there is someone who is like, people die. We suffered this loss because you didn't do the thing. In this case, you know, Tachibana, it's like, well, if you didn't shoot Godzilla, the crew would be alive. And meanwhile, with, you know, his neighbor, let me find her name. It's like, Sumiko. She's like, if you'd done your duty and become kamikaze, then my kids would have survived. We wouldn't have, you know, lost like this. And like, in both cases, it's sort of like, both of these things are sort of like driving both his like survivor's guilt to the nth degree, and also just like the, I could have done more, but also in like sort of reinforcing in his worldview that like, oh, I shouldn't have lived, maybe, which is like an important part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's just sort of, it's just where it's like, well, obviously, you know, much like some of the people 20 minutes earlier in the movie, him dying wouldn't have done shit.
Yeah.
Those kids, all respect to Sumiko, all those kids would have died no matter what Koichi was. But obviously, you know, grieving mother, you know, how it is. And especially when you're bought into, when you're subjected to the Imperial propaganda, and that's, you know, the whole world shattering that way. But meanwhile, you have the conflation with, like, we have no idea what the gun would have done to Godzilla. Like, he could have shot Godzilla. And, like, because it's Godzilla, it probably wouldn't have done much. But there is still the feeling of, like, well, the gun could have, the gun could have done something, maybe. But also, Koichi probably would have just died in that case. So it's just a weird sort of, like, thing where I'm, like, I don't know. Do you get what I'm trying to say?
Yes, but so I thought kind of in the same headspace as you, and I came away liking it because I think this is genuinely a very good story about survivor's guilt in the sense that it is, I don't want to say messy because I don't really think it is that much really, but there are multiple layers to his trauma from this, and he does have to wrestle with varying degrees of could I have done something more? Would I have made a difference in this world if I had actually died or had done something more risky and all those different possibilities? But at the end of the day, what it really comes down to is he should not have been forced to have been in any of these situations anyway. Yeah, yeah. And as a result of that, I think the final note they leave off on with this arc, with him choosing to live, I think works a lot. Because I do think that they definitely want you as the audience to wonder, could he have saved those lives? And I do think that as we learn more about Godzilla later on in the movie, it's very clear, like, no, that gun probably wouldn't have done shit. That's never really pointed out to Koichi, but, the fact remains, he had no business really being in the situation where he was in that cockpit anyhow. Yeah. And it's really not his fault that those people died.
Yeah. I think I was like, it is a thing where I think I, like, as time went on, I was more positive on it and just like, yeah, it wouldn't have made a difference either way. It is fucking Godzilla. So it works better, but like, it was a thought I had like while I was watching the movie.
Mm-hmm. So, while he is getting settled again, due to a series of bizarre, or not really a series, but a bizarre run-in with a fellow survivor in town, he meets this woman who is caring for a baby, and her name is Noriko. And it's not her baby. She rescued the baby from a house that was bombed and on fire. The mother was dying and said, please, please care for my baby. And being a good person, she's like, I cannot fucking leave this baby to die. Decided to, raise it as her own. And, Koichi is touched by this, but he's also a little bit like, you know, no one would have really blamed you if you had left the baby. But then she points out too, because earlier on, she has to go into hiding because she stole some stuff, and she leaves the baby in his care. And instead of abandoning it, he does his due diligence and tracks her down again. And she says, well, you couldn't leave the baby either. And it's almost through this shared moment of, like, empathy for this helpless kid that they decide, like, we should help each other out. And their relationship forms, and it becomes quickly a found family situation where these three people that are not at all related start to act as a nuclear family unit.
It should be stated their decision to help each other out is almost like an unstated thing where they just kind of just like by the inertia of it just decide to like stick together.
She just decides to crash at his place, and he's like, well, I'm not going to kick him out. Yeah. Stop fucking him.
Yeah, then we get different, like, time skips as, like, we get their found family integrating, including with, like, funny enough, Sumiko next door, who, like, you know, just slowly, I think, overcomes her grief and, you know, becomes less hostile to Koichi throughout the movie as, like, she becomes Akiko's aunt, basically.
Yeah.
And that's an important part of, like, the movie, which we will loop around back to towards the climax.
Yeah. And Koichi gets a job. The most dangerous job in the world.
I wonder if there's a reason why he picked the most dangerous job in the world.
Yeah, I actually adored that choice as well. But he decides to become a minesweeper on this wooden boat. The reason being, the wooden boat is not going to attract the magnetic mines that are still littered throughout the sea, due to both the Imperial Navy and also the American Navy.
Oh, so the Imperial Navy.
Yeah, true. So he tags along with a scientist, a old sea captain from the Japanese Navy, and then also some kid who was not in the war, but really still has the wool pulled over his eyes in terms of thinking that soldiers and people who saw action are cool, which Koichi is quick to chew him out for and be like, don't fucking act like that in front of me. And he starts to, they become like another like supportive group of like friends for him to socialize with. And he quickly becomes close with them as well. And it turns out that Koichi, with his experience in the war, is actually a pretty good shot and does a pretty good job at doing minesweeping stuff.
Better than I can do on Windows.
We then see, as Mel alluded to earlier, the Bikini Atoll tests. Somewhere Naked Snake is there, getting irradiated.
Yeah, also, Godzilla also gets irradiated, and we get a good shot of its eye getting, like, you know.
Corrupted.
Nuked.
Yeah.
Also, we get, I think this is a bit later, but we get, like, stuff about, like, oh no, there's, ships are getting attacked. The U.S. doesn't want to help because it's the Cold War, so MacArthur says, good luck.
Yeah, there's a Douglas MacArthur jump scare, like, one-fourth of the way into this movie. I laughed my ass off.
I am glad the directors of the movie agree that Douglas MacArthur was a piece of shit.
Yeah, specifically, America does not want to send military support to Japan because they're afraid that if they start to build up a naval presence in those oceans, the Soviet Union is going to view that as an aggressive act and start some shit. And they're like, we can't risk that. So sorry, Japan, you're going to have to fend for yourself here. So they, along with a few other boats that they have on hand, are basically on task to essentially delay Godzilla from actually making landfall on the Japanese coast, while they wait for decommissioned warships to arrive and blow Godzilla the fuck up. They do successfully put a mine into Godzilla's mouth and blow it up, but even though Godzilla gets, like, Batman two-faced, he just regrows that shit. And then a cruiser shows up and starts to bombard the shit
the Takao, out of Godzilla. Which is important, that it's the Takao.
This eluded me. What is the importance of this?
Oh, I don't know. It's just like they brought attention to it.
Okay.
I will loop back around to this maybe at the end of the movie too. There was something about this and another aspect of the climax, which I have thoughts about. In like a passive way, but we'll talk about
it. Okay. So, they think, yay, we did it, we stopped Godzilla, and then Godzilla just destroys this fucking ship, and, our little friends on the wooden minesweeper ship go, oh, fuck, okay, we gotta get out of here.
Somehow they survive.
Yes.
As if Koichi can't have more survivor skills.
Yeah.
He'll get more later.
They get back more... drama happens. The government doesn't want to reveal the full extent of Godzilla's destructive capability because they do not want to cause mass panic. Meanwhile, Koichi and Noriko are kind of going through it because Koichi, as people press him...
Look, to the TLDR, they're still in a situationship.
Yes. Basically. Koichi's like, listen, she's not my wife. This little girl she calls me daddy. I don't like that. I'm not her dad. This whole found family thing is not happening.
His coworkers are like, bro, you have a found family, just like embrace.
Yeah, his coworkers are so real for this. They're like literally the doc says something like, fate brought you together in the most beautiful way, and you are being the biggest twerp for not accepting that life gave you this. It's a wonderful moment when they're all eating dinner, and you can tell that Noriko is really bothered by this. Akiko also definitely has some feelings that as a child she can't exactly express.
Notably, Akiko calls him like daddy, and Koichi is just like, remember, I told you, you're not daddy. Literally, everyone at the table is like, bro, what the fuck? What the fuck are you saying to a child?
Yeah, it's good. So Noriko, you know, hearing all of this goes, well, yeah, okay, I got an office job in Ginza then, and, you know, I'm gonna leave Akiko with her new neighbor aunt. Is it Sumika? Sumiko?
Yeah, Sumiko.
Sumiko. You know, she'll be next door, but, you know, it's whatever, we'll all go our separate ways. And you can tell Koichi is really upset about this, but he's like, haha, yeah, okay. going to work, in Ginza, Godzilla decides to attack Ginza.
Is that a bit later, or is it still... I guess you're using the... Yeah, I guess you're going for the wiki article. I forget if there was something in between, because I feel like stuff happened between, but it may have just been chilling.
I believe it is mostly just relationship drama stuff. Like, between...
Yeah.
This is, like, my memory of it. It's just a lot of, like, discussion regarding... Well, I mean, I think the one thing we left out is that Koichi is struggling to tell Noriko about Godzilla, and I think this is around the time where he also opens up more regarding what happened on the island, and opens up to her a little bit more about his survivor's guilt, and she is very good about telling him, like, no, you cannot blame yourself for this.
Yeah.
Like, you need to believe in yourself and the people around you and stay grounded.
Yeah, less important details, Godzilla is still classified, and Captain's main personality trait is, fuck government bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Spiritual holdover from Shin Godzilla, just not the forefront as much.
Yes. But also with this huge historical weight to it that I guess we'll get into a little bit later when they talk about their private citizen's plan.
Yeah, but we're not there yet. I have thoughts about that.
Ginza gets attacked. Noriko, so Koichi goes to rescue Noriko, or at least try to find her, make sure she's safe. Yeah. Godzilla. Oh, go ahead.
I just want to say, this scene was cool. It is like the tentpole kaiju destruction scene of the movie.
Yes.
It is interesting, like, seeing this scene. It is a modern scene made in CG. Because, of course, they're not doing... This isn't the same blazer. They're not doing suits. And it's interesting comparing, like, modern cinema CG while thinking back to, like, the older movies where it is, like, a suit going through... Because
like
of
a scale city.
Yeah, but also because of the time period this movie takes place in, the architecture in this scene is similar to ones in the older movies, which I think is interesting. What's one of the interesting things is that this movie takes place before the original movie.
That's why it's minus one.
Yeah. It takes place before the original movie in the chronology of Anno Domini, or Common Era, if you prefer.
We must note that this is the Godzilla closest to Jesus' life.
I mean,
it's very important. It's very important.
I guess. Dude, what if Godzilla Joel was secretly part of Celestial Being?
Eh? I think Chibi Godzilla would fit in. Chibi Godzilla and Haro would get up to some shenanigans. And they'd both get bullied by mean Haro, but...
It's just interesting because, like, because of when they set this movie as a period piece, And so it does, it is interesting just being like comparing the locations to like the ones in the actual older movies from the 50s and 60s, you know.
Yeah. I do love how all of this looks. And the thing that everyone has been pointing out online is like, this is like a $15 million budget. And it looks, in considering that, this movie looks fucking incredible.
Now, I did see someone point out a lot of that maybe just because Japan treats its workers worse. Not that the US is very good, but you know.
That's disparaging and unfortunate. Or not disparaging, depressing is what I meant to say.
Yeah, I don't know,
D word.
I don't know which is the biggest factor here. I can definitely see the case of being there is just like Hollywood is bad at money sometimes. Yeah. But also it is just the truth that even compared to the US, unionization in Japan is very not good.
Yeah,
that's
true. See the state of the animation industry right now.
You know what? Also something to blame Douglas MacArthur for. of course, that was his job, but you know. But yeah,
so
the Ginza scene.
Towards the end, well, so Godzilla fires off a heat ray, which is like the big nuclear blast analog in this movie.
Also, I don't know if this was like unique to this Godzilla or if it was similar to Shin Godzilla, but it's really cool when he's preparing the heat ray and like the scales on his back like come out like a mecha thing.
That's like a Shin thing, I'm pretty sure. Which I think design wise, like there's definitely like there's a lot of holdover from Shin in this Godzilla as well.
I think the one in Shin is more fucked up, but like this one I think is definitely clearly a successor to it.
Yes. And like that is the one thing that like is like definitely like okay, there's a case that like there's this one thread that kind of connects between the two with like the actual Godzilla. But like I don't feel like the narrative of Shin.
Yeah, I guess that in Shin, you do get larval Godzilla, which is like clearly makes it feel like it's a different entity than this one.
Yeah, I just don't feel like Shin really feels like it. Like this movie took place. I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch Shin.
I mean, of course not. It came out first.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like how a Gundam 0079 doesn't feel like Oath of Mestium takes place.
Well, yeah. But there's not even, I feel like room really for a prequel in Shin.
Yeah.
I'd have to go back and watch it, but like, I don't know. I feel like it's mostly just marketing showboating that they wanted to tie these two together so strongly.
I mean, obviously Shin Godzilla is successful and also the only movie of the modern era, because it is the only movie of the modern era that they could like point to.
Yeah.
Be like, well, we have a benchmark for what Godzilla in the Reiwa era would be.
And to be fair, I do not think for a second this movie would have been written the way it is had Shin Godzilla not have been such a landmark hit that it was. They absolutely made this movie wanting to recapture that movie's energy, but they went their own way with it enough that it absolutely feels like its own unique thing, which I appreciated a lot. But yes, the nuclear blast. The heat ray goes off.
I will just say, tying onto that, the Blazer movie will not be in conversation with Shin Ultraman.
Godzilla fires the heat ray. Massive explosion. They're conveniently standing. Okay, I saw this coming a fucking mile away as soon as I saw them standing next to that alley, by just the way.
Standing a little too long next to that alley.
I was like waiting for it. She, seeing the blast coming, pushes Koichi into the alley, and then she gets like thrown like away, and Koichi, once he recovers and is able to like stand back up again, as Godzilla gets bored and wanders back to sea, he just comes out and looks at the absolute destruction around him, and Noriko is nowhere. She's just gone, and he obviously assumes that he lost someone who he cared deeply
more
about.
More survivor's guilt, baby!
Yeah.
Punish Koichi. I was kind of hit or miss on this, on the what happened, and obviously the end of the movie changes it. Mm-hmm. But in the moment, I was a bit like, isn't this a bit much? It's just like, because, you know, there is like, one, he already has enough survivor's guilt going on, and two, you do too often in media have the case of like, female character dies for character development.
Yeah.
And in this case, they do interesting things with it where it's like, oh, I dare to believe I could actually live again and be happy with someone, and then they took that from me, and so clearly I have to double down on my death drive and get revenge on Godzilla.
Yeah, I also had the same thing where I'm like, this is absolutely doing the thing where to further this man's personal arc, they're absolutely throwing the woman out of the movie. Unlike most things, she's not actually dead, but like, that absolutely is happening here. But at the same time, they do use that to make this a story about a man who has lost it. Like, and this is where I feel more fine with it than I do in other things, is that...
Yeah, and to be clear, the ending did change my view on this as well, and we'll get to that when we get to the ending, but, you know.
Yeah. Because what it does for this movie is that it becomes a movie now that acknowledges that loss doesn't stop when the war ends. Like, going back to what I discussed, that I view Godzilla in this movie as just a symbol for World War II writ large. Like, once peace is declared, that doesn't stop the conditions that lead to people dying. Like, there's still famine, there's still loss, there illness, you know, just long lasting wounds that, you know, have critical, you know, unfortunate, like, death continues long after war itself ends. Yeah. And that felt like, I guess, pushing back against my own read of this here, having that happen via a atomic blast, definitely just feels like it's more commenting on loss as part of the war itself. But I don't know, it still works for me overall, just feeling like, when you are someone who is in that survival position and you are a survivor, loss doesn't just stop happening to you, unfortunately, and it sucks, but like, you have to still carry on. But this, I guess, going back to the summary, this does put Koichi back into that mindset of, my battle has not ended. Like, we almost, in so many ways, he basically feels like this is a fated rival for him, Godzilla, and like, it's his duty to do whatever he can to contribute to Godzilla being stopped.
Much like Jun and Pegula, this will not be the last Pegula reference you make in this episode.
Absolutely. So this is where everyone in the community says, well, the military is not going to help us. But we all know how to pilot battleships that like are just kind of still around in the aftermath of the war. This is going to be a citizen's effort to, and I actually really like this plan. I was like, you know what, this checks out considering the period piece element
of it. We have what every kaiju movie needs: a big meeting where people talk about plans.
Yes. So their plan.
I will also say it did, because I'm leftist brain, it did feel weird to me being like, oh, cool, the state is failing people, so the people rise up, but it feels in a libertarian way.
A little bit.
Like, it doesn't feel like the grassroots community so much as like the neighborhood watch in a way. It feels like a...
This is absolutely dudes rock, respect the troops, vets coming back for one more battle.
It's like, it's not just like the, it's not like the, you know, just community, is more like, we are the leftover veterans, and also some guys who run companies come together.
You know,
all good for community rising up, but there's ways to make it lean one way or there's the other, and it could be like a thin line.
The thing that I think pushes it enough into the wheelhouse I'm comfortable saying, like, I feel like they mostly know what they're doing, is, like, this movie is so fucking ready to just say that Imperial Japanese Army did not know what the fuck it was doing and treated people horribly. Yeah, and,
I guess the guy
in charge of the operation basically all but says, like, we all received terrible orders to do things none of us believed in the war, and I understand why you would be completely against going back in for another round of that, but you just have to trust me that we are doing this to save lives here, sort of thing.
Yeah, it does also just feel like it pulls its punches a bit for me, in the way it feels a bit like believes in the goodness of the lowly soldier who was simply just betrayed by the brass. That's some of the vibes I got, and there's some other militaristic aspects I get later, but, like, you know, the movie is more anti-war and anti-Imperial Japan. It's just, like, you know, I'll talk about my other thoughts a bit later, but you can see what I'm getting at, right?
Kinda, yeah. I feel like I'm overall pretty positive on it still, especially considering the...
Yeah, I'm still, like, more positive. It's just, like, wrinkles that got me, like, It's more that, like, because of Toho being a big company in Japan, having the economic system that it is, I'm just like, well, obviously this is a liberal movie. Basically. Yeah. Like, it's not like a conservative movie, but it's a liberal movie.
It is. I feel like it's at least pushing... It pushed more than I thought we would get. Yeah. And I'm not trying to let that, like, color my view too much, but, like, even the scene after this we get where the kid, they tell the kid from the boat, like, hey, you're not going along, and the captain who served in World War II says outright, you should be proud of the fact you're the one here who has not fought in a war. Yeah. That is something to be proud of, which I was not expecting them to even go that far.
Yeah. All right, I would say that, just, like, I'm not expecting this from a Godzilla movie or for what this kind of movie this is, though I'll just say, like, as a blanket statement, that a more radical movie would probably criticize the ideology of Imperial Japan more directly, as opposed to just, like, its competence. But that's, like, you know, not the point of the movie. It's just, like, a thing I'm saying right now. So as an aside.
See, the thing is, I feel like we get that with the Ejection, though. I think that's okay, where the movie... Okay. That is where, for the movie, for me, goes, like, that was all horseshit.
Okay.
And every... Like, it's a complete rejection of those ideals.
Okay, so we can get this more, because there's, like, still...
Yeah.
More, quote-unquote, baggage of Imperial Japan that we can get to later.
Yeah. So the plan is that they have a bunch of Freon gas tanks from a company that makes balloons. They are going to surround it with these tanks and, like, use some sort of, like, device or mechanism to, like, hook them onto Godzilla. They are then going to inflate the balloons automatically, and then that is going to cause enough weight, it's going to lower the water's buoyancy and create this, like, sort of, like, gas bubble around Godzilla that will cause him to sink with great, like, speed to the bottom of the deepest trench in, like, the area they're in, and then they're gonna let just the pressure of the ocean itself kill Godzilla. But then people are like, how do we know that this isn't, like, a creature that can resist that pressure at the deep sea, even if it's, like, they're kind of banking on the fact that, like, it's gonna sink faster than normal sea creatures' bodies can acclimate pressures.
Basically want to give it compression sickness.
Yes, I did think it's extremely fucking funny that their plan basically boils down to, we're gonna trust the bends to get the job done for us. But
real skydiving energy.
True. So the balloons are gonna sink Godzilla, but then what they're also going to do is they're going to... Oh, sorry. Okay, so this is what's going to happen. The gas tanks and the balloons are separate. That's right. The gas tanks are going to cause the gas bubble that changes the water's buoyancy and sinks Godzilla. And then there's also balloons attached to the tanks that will then bounce Godzilla back up, basically, and make him float back up to the surface extremely fast, which would then kill Godzilla through extreme decompression. And they are not, nobody is sure that this is exactly going to work, but it would, to the best of their knowledge of the science at the time, this would kill any creature on Earth that they're currently aware of. So they're like, it's probably a good shot. So yeah, they then go and, start working on their plan, but then one thing that they note is that they need someone with fighter jet experience to basically get Godzilla's attention and then bait him to the trench.
I think it's more that, like, Koichi finds a reason to get them to want a fighter jet pilot so he can get a fighter jet pilot for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, too, at this point in the movie, considering he lost Noriko, like, we are obviously led to believe, like, oh no, he is going to try to kamikaze Godzilla. And this is confirmed to us when he tracks down Tachibana, who...
Specifically, he sends sends letters to every
single... Email!
Yeah. I don't know why I said email. The internet didn't exist yet. He sends letters to... basically everywhere he can find, going like, haha, it's actually all your fault, everyone died, you're a loser, Lamao, specifically to get Tachibana to come beat him up.
Yeah, and
he was like,
and then be like, that was bullshit, I just did that to get your attention.
And very, very pathetically going, I need you to fight my battle with me, I'm gonna kamikaze to fucking kill Godzilla, and Tachibana's like, okay.
And specifically, his reasoning for this is because he was on that minesweeper boat, and he saw that when the actual military vessel was bombarding Godzilla, it was barely doing shit. But when they managed to get a mine in its mouth and then blow it up, it blew up half of its face.
Yeah.
And his logic is, its interior is a weak spot. If we kamikaze this thing when it has its mouth open, we can kill it.
Yeah. I forgot if you mentioned, but, like, worth noting, they have, like, a prototype advanced plane that is out of commission that never saw service that's just, like, in a garage, and that's why they got Tachibana.
Yes, the Shinden.
Yeah, and this is when I start feeling, like, weird, maybe a little bit about... I think, in the end, I like how, in a way, the movie repudiates it, but while I was watching it, it was a bit wishy-washy, because it did feel like there was a bit of a reverence for the actual military technology of Imperial Japan in this movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I just expect that from a lot of this shit, yeah, sadly. Like, but this is peak military otaku shit.
And that includes, like, you know, the warships.
Yes.
Like the Takao and the other ones that they use in the plan later.
That was absolutely there for sure.
And so it did make it feel like a bit like, oh yeah, this is a liberal movie because it isn't polar punches enough on, like, you know, the fascist navy is still cool, etc.
And there is an adoration for this plane in a way that is
and you know what,
yeah,
in the scene where he's flying the plane, I will go, you know what, I'll give him this. It is a cool plane.
Yeah, that remnant of, I mean, this is a long-held thing in tokusatsu in general. Like, a lot of the people who are involved with this stuff are those military guys that are going to bat for the love of this weaponry.
They sure made two whole mobile games about Japanese warships are cool to the extent that what if they were girls you could like. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I feel this even with, like, completely other side of tokusatsu in a radical way, but, like, even, like, Oshii's Kerberos movies are movies about, like, the horrific, like, fascist, like, forces that cause people to come, like, to become, like, police officers and what policing looks like and how cops are pigs and assholes. All of the merch for those movies are, hey, do you want this cool-ass Jeep and German Axis powers inspired machine gun, and it's like, yeah. Oh.
And, like, I forget who said this on the GGP War in the Pocket episodes. I think it may have been Austin. But I think maybe it's just a case of, like, to some extent, the weapons of war and of imperialism being cool is kind of the point in a way. Like, if the machines being cool is kind of makes the war appealing, and so, you know, you get what I'm saying, right?
That's how people get drawn into it, is what you're saying. It is another avenue of the propaganda through which they feel compelled to get on board. Which I guess opens up like a broader discussion about, like, this is them using a lot of, like, weaponry and Imperial Japanese armament from the aftermath of the war. And I feel like it does inevitably, this is going to rub up against, like, does this feel like apologia?
Yeah, yeah. Because the feeling I got up until, like, the resolution of the plot, which we'll get to, is just, like, they dig up the prototype plane, the advanced prototype plane that they never put into service, and Koichi was going to use it to fulfill his kamikaze duty, and it was sort of, like, the last... It felt, in a way, like, oh, he's going to do the last gasp of the spirit of Imperial Japan to take out Godzilla. And ultimately what they do is a repudiation of that. Instead of, you know, doing like the second episode of Pegula of Ultra Q, which I thought that may have been the direction it was going.
I think you and I were both this entire movie thinking, oh fuck, are they gonna do the fucking Pegula thing
again? if for whatever reason you were listening to this and haven't listen to our other episodes, go watch Ultra.
Very likely. People are probably just going to find this looking for Godzilla Minus One podcast.
We're on iTunes now, so we can have the people actually find this.
Yeah, there is a episode of the original Ultra show, Ultra Q, where a kamikaze pilot, quote-unquote, does right and stops a kaiju attack by getting the plane back and ramming into it with a special anti-kaiju chemical on board.
And therefore orphaning his child.
Yes.
Who was in the episode.
And it feels disgusting and horrific and a lot worse than how this all shakes out. What I was going to say about, like... I can't even say this in good faith or offer this much generosity to this angle of the movie, because, like, I feel like someone could make the argument, like, this is them using, like, picking up the pieces of the world they've been left with and trying to make right by those things and try to live within the reality that they're within and pick up those pieces and try to do right by the people around them and not run away from that history, but use what's left behind for something better. But the movie does not interrogate that at all. I feel like that would be a reach.
Yeah. At the end of the day,
especially I don't know. Personally speaking, I'm always going to be of the opinion that like disarmament is good. Like for any sorts of these sorts of weapons or these relics of these killing machines that were used as tools of like mass violence. I struggle to come up with a charitable read of, well, you want to keep those around. I don't know. It just doesn't sit right with me. But
yeah, at the end of the day, he still does win by using the Shinden to its conclusion. Just that, you know, the plan changes at the last minute to be better. And we'll get
now,
to that.
I guess you could say then, though, too, that he is destroying both the remnant of that technology and Godzilla. Like, it's a symbolic death of both fronts, of both, like, the human-made weaponry and Godzilla as metaphor for the ruination of World War II at once.
Yeah, I guess. I guess in a way,
and escaping that by choosing to live, but I don't know.
So I guess, maybe, I guess we should carry on now to the fact that the plan is starting to get in motion. And he is making his post-death plans for Akiko, while also Tachibana is making discoveries.
Yes. So,
I think maybe first of all we should, you know, do the meeting where there's a meeting where Doc basically gives a speech where he's like, yeah, that kamikaze shit was bad, and the Imperial philosophy of throwing away lives was bad, and that's when I started to go like, okay, the movie isn't going to do Pegula episode two. And it is notably, he specifically mentions planes without ejection seats, and then immediate next scene you just see Tachi Brand looking, fixing the plane and just going, oh, something up with the seat. Very subtlety is for cowards.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I do love his speech. I completely forgot about that, but I did love that speech where he's like, the way, like, how we were living our lives and what we were taught we should believe in was a load of horseshit, and it was, we lost out on so much because we viewed life so carelessly.
Yeah, and I just remembered it, also as well, this is not related to the movie really, but just, like, describing the callous list through which Imperial Japan used its, you know, just crashed its, you know, people against the Western and the Allied powers, armies. It does just bring to mind how, like, the quote-unquote hordes of Japanese were used, of course, in racist propaganda by the Americans in, like, the depictions of the battles.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a random aside, I just remember that when talking about this right now.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what else, because, like, the Wikipedia summary I'm using is kind of a baseline here.
There's a lot of gaps. There's, like,
yeah.
So we get the speech, and they're like, getting ready. Okay, the Godzilla's coming. Getting ready. Tachibana finds the seat, and stuff's gonna happen to that later. And meanwhile, Koichi's like, well, I guess I'm gonna go off myself in a plane, so I'm gonna, you know, lying to a child, don't worry, I won't leave you. Anyway, here's a bunch of envelope to give Auntie next door, which has, you know,
a shit ton of money in it.
And expressions like, hey, take care of the kid.
Yeah.
And of course, at this point, gonna tie into the whatever happens to Tachibana next. Obviously, Sumiko is like, after Koichi goes to take off, she gets the envelope from Akiko and, like, reads the letter, and she's, like, horrified at, like, no.
Yeah.
Completely 180 from the start of the movie. And we'll get, I want to return to that later as we get towards the end. But now the plan is in motion, and Godzilla has shown up a bit earlier than expected.
And not in the right place, if I recall, too.
Yes.
Like, needs to be kited back to where the original plan was going to take place, like, by Koichi in the plane.
You know what? We actually do need the plane to go take him where we want to. We also get a fun scene of, like, yeah, it's a cool scene where he ace combats around Godzilla.
Yes.
In the rural field, and it did remind me a bit of, like, you know, we do have sometimes the Kaiju scenes where there's a stop around a field, and I was just like, oh, there's, like, the modern, non-practical set version of this, which is interesting.
Yeah. So they then get to the trench. The balloons are all activated. They activate the tanks. They get Godzilla down. They then activate the balloons to do the second part of the plan to really make sure he's dead. Spoilers, he's not. However, there's a problem in that Godzilla has some fucking chompers, and starts chewing through the balloons.
I just want to say, Godzilla throws a heat ray, and he's about to do it again, and then they do the sinking, and, like, the heat ray just stops when it hits, like, the bottom, and oh, that's cool. It's a cool moment.
Yeah, no, I love how they, everything with the heat ray in this movie is the coolest fucking shit.
I love when they have to deal with Kaiju through elaborate plans. Instead of just, like, having the GSDF firing at it for 30 minutes.
Yeah, and honestly, like, this is probably pseudoscience bullshit, but, like, I felt like this plan completely worked within the fiction, and a bunch of, citizens would have access to.
We've seen a bunch of, like, Kaiju Godzilla adjacent movies, and we've seen a lot of Ultra series episodes at this point, and there's Suture Silence bullshit in all of it. This is the nature of kaiju.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, this is like the good kind of like operation. I feel like watching these movies, it is easy to see how you do just get, you know, when Eiji Tsuburaya tries to do a series of Godzilla movies for TV, and then also just gets really into Thunderbirds, how you just get like, oh, we just have a team specifically for doing kaiju plans, as opposed to just like, you know, more ad hoc
teams, yeah.
Like in these, like in the Godzilla movies.
Yeah.
Makes a bit more sense when it's, you know, airing a show every week and you want the same characters, as opposed to like, oh, here's a new standalone film story kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just me musing about the, you know, the genre.
Yeah. Well,
Godzilla's back again.
Godzilla's been, well, so what they're doing is they're like, oh, we need to continue the second part of the plan, and he's chewing through. He's not dead. We need to
use R2. They need to get R2. The fuck out of here.
Yeah, I did state, also too, I should clarify, I did state this plan does make sense considering what citizens would have access to, like this stuff. It is important to note that the government is technically like, we don't really technically want to be a part of this, but we will lend you some of our cool World War II shit
that we still have around. There is some ex-military guys, and I think at this point, a few actual military guys act in a private capacity.
Yeah.
And they're using warships, but I think at this point they're like, the warships are trying to escape Godzilla, but can't do so fast enough. But then the civilian tugboat brigade comes by with, like,
led by the kid.
Yeah. And this one feels better, because it's, like, actual grassroots in a way.
Yeah, and I adore that we simultaneously get the scene of everyone telling him, like, this should not fall on your shoulders, and this is not a battle that you should fight. We are the ones with the experience. We are the ones that have dealt with this sort of thing before. We will take care of it. Please just live your life, and you shouldn't have to risk yourself. But then he does it anyways, because he's like, I don't fucking care. This is the right thing to do. And everyone else here believes it too.
Yeah.
It
does feel better that he does it for the right reasons the second time. Like, he's not doing it for, like, the war adventure of it. He's, like, doing, well, I want to help my guys.
You know what? This... Okay, I'm not going to lie to you, Mel. In the theater, I was like, I can't believe they did the fucking Rise of Skywalker thing, but it didn't make me go fuck off.
I didn't see the Rise of Skywalker, so...
Oh, a bunch of fucking, it's the most neo-lib shit ever, where, like, everyone's fucking private starship yacht in the galaxy pulls up to fight, the evil... outside of the galaxy dark fascist force at the end, so everyone can be like, we're not gonna win the war with the rebellion, we're gonna beat them with the good hearts of the people, and like, this is just a version of that just feels a lot better and more down to earth and real.
Oscar Isaac voice, somehow Godzilla returned.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I think there's actually a line in Rise of Skywalker where they're like, it's not the resistance, it's people or some shit, like, it's so fucking bad. Anyways, fuck that movie.
I think George Lucas had a better sense of politics, even if he's a bit weird about the prequels, but anyway.
Yeah. For lack of a better term, they give Godzilla a tugger, with their fleet of tugboats, and they bring him back up to the surface, and he's a little fucked up, but he's still kicking.
He's about to heat ray again.
Yeah.
And however, was like, oh no, we're gonna die, and I was like, well, they better not fucking die.
And this is where I actually, because Koichi's still been flying around this whole time, and I actually think the movie does a pretty good job here of giving everyone else shit to do, and it's a little bit before we go back to Koichi just being around, to the point where he's kind of out of sight, out of mind, and then when the heat ray is being charged up, Koichi goes in to crash his plane the bomb.
The mouth is open, yeah. Tachibana put the high explosive bombs in the nose as told.
We should state, Koichi requests Tachibana put a high-powered bomb into the plane, basically kitting it out with less fuel and bombs that are going to be manned but not dropped. You know, it's the kamikaze loadout. And he doesn't, specifically, he does not tell this to the rest of his, you know, crew that is on this operation.
Worth noting, they are like, he might do this. I don't like the vibes.
They absolutely, like, I mean, when he goes to fly out, I think it's the captain calls him and he's like, do not make this a death mission for you. Like, yeah. you come back alive. So we think at first that Koichi sacrifices himself in the kamikaze attack.
We think, but also, let's be real.
Also, too, if you look for it, you can see him ejecting. It's very blink and you'll miss it, but you can't see
him ejecting. Yeah, yeah, so, like, earlier we get the scene where, like, before this we got the scene where there's, like, the Tachibana saying, okay, here's, like, what you need to do, here's what you need to do, pull this thing to...
Here's how you prime the bomb.
One more thing, and we can't cut off.
And it's like, gee, I wonder what the one more thing is.
The one more thing is, after he was staring conspicuously at the seat.
And then we flash back to that.
That's power of cinema.
Yes. And it is obvious, but it also, I still think, really works well. Everything needs to be a fucking surprise, you know? Yeah. So.
It felt like a relief when it was confirmed more than anything, because it's like, I want to make sure, I know they're going to do it, but I want, like, to see it. The catharsis of seeing it, because still, even until it happens, there's still the thin law, like, I hope they're not going to validate the kamikaze sort of, like, ethos.
Yes. And they don't. Koichi ejected and is completely fine. Everyone's happy.
Yeah, and, Tachibana was like, you have to live. You have to eject. Please do this. And, you know,
And this was the part, because I feel like I've been going to bat for this movie a lot when you raise stuff, but, like, this what I should clarify that while I was in the theater watching this, I was along with you feelings-wise, where I was like, this is a real teetering on the edge, and I hope that the seesaw lands on the right angle. And when we finally get the scene where Tachibana is just completely, like, he is the guy in this movie that has the most reason to hate Koichi, and, like, they share an origin, as far as the story is confirmed, and to see that he independently, even though he has also clearly had a miserable go of things, is also, like, the world that we knew from that period and our part of our lives, it was complete bullshit, and we should not have been fighting that war or have been in that situation. And it is okay for you to live and do something else with that pick up the pieces.
Like, that's also one for me is, like, okay, it's good in the end, because it's like, you know, just skipping ahead a bit, there's a part where, you know, Koichi makes it back to shore and Sumiko comes and just, like, not, like, aggressively, but just, like, kind of, like, slaps him and is like, what the fuck are you doing, you idiot?
Yes.
And it's just, like, it felt very good to me, just, like, we have these two characters from the two sort of, like, ends of things, which are, like, both for their own reasons, were like, you should have died, is your you being alive costs the lives of the people I cared about, you know, and fueled, you know, Koichi's survivor's guilt and death drive and sort of, like, desire to, like, make things right through his suicide. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the movie, and, like, you know, Sumiko admittedly is basically 45 minutes into the movie already there, basically, as, like, the additional member of the found family, but still, you know, important for, like, the themes. Just, like, both of them by the end are just like, no, you are valuable, you are important, you should live, you survived, and the fact you have
someone who needs you bad.
Yeah. Like... And, like, the fact that both of them go from, like, you living was a problem to, no, you surviving is important, is just good, I think. And yeah, to match Tachibana just, like, basically coming along because he's like, okay, I hate you, but you are saying you're going to make things right through, like, killing yourself. And then through just, like, doing the work independently goes, actually, no, that he should not kill himself. He should survive. It's good. I liked it.
And that, like, this sequence alone gives me such a more charitable outlook on everything else this movie is doing that could be read dubiously. I like, the one thing that I just can't get past is, like, I do think that this absolutely has a fetishization for Axis power war tech in a way that I just think is unfortunately going to always be the case for toku stuff.
At least until we actually, no, I won't let the CIA say anything, but anyway.
Okay. but I mean, hey, also, we're mecha fans. Axis design sensibilities all the fucking place over that shit, including places where it doesn't belong. Looking at Yuuzhan's counterattack, so many bad reads of that movie are, I think, a result of those fucking Gyarados designs. Yeah,
too many people, including people who go on to make more Gundam stuff, being like, well, the Zeons are clearly put more German on it anyway. This is not the Great Gundam Project, but anyway.
No, I mean, we're Gundam people. This is unfortunately true of our lives.
This is who we are.
Yeah.
The final bit of the movie, I think, is where we're at.
Yeah. Sumiko's like, hey, you wouldn't fucking believe what I got in the mail. Your not wife, but soon-to-be wife is absolutely still fucking alive. Go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And there's a family reunion as Koichi takes Akiko. Notably,
like, because of just, like, the scale of the destruction of Ginza is, like, they never did find the body, and, like, there's a lot of people buried, and that's, you know, that's just what happens in disasters, but, like...
Yes.
This definitely feels like a miracle, but not in one way where I can understand it. And also, like, this is more like preemptively countering Devil's Advocate. It feels like there are definitely times where it feels like, oh, they were alive the whole time, actually can be a cop-out, but I feel like in this case it feels earned and good and better for what the movie wants to be.
I kind of, like the ejection sheet, I kind of expected it as soon as we saw that we're not going to see the body.
Yeah, I was wondering that, and I wasn't, like, sure. But when we got the thing in the mail, I was like, what could this be?
So, unlike the ejection seat thing, though, I will say, I do think, if she had been dead, I still think I would have liked this movie a lot.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I think I feel better knowing that she wasn't just fridged for his character to go.
Yes,
on.
Exactly. I think it's better that she is alive.
Even if you do feel like, oh, she lived, that's a cop-out, like, you know, it's better for what the movie's good for.
See... The thing for me is it doesn't even feel like a cop-out, but de facto, like, this has the same, like, in terms of runtime and actually having the characters on the screen, the result is the same until this last bit here of having fridged her, where she is suddenly no longer her own independent, like, actor in this narrative, and is just thrown by the wayside for a bit to further the emotions of our main male protagonist. But that being said, I do think that going back around and be like, no, she's okay, and they can all be happy together is a very good note to end on.
Yeah. Also, just as a note, I was like, because I was on the fence on if she survived, I was a bit like, ah, no, his soul photo of her is, like, going to go down with the plane that gets blown up. So I was like, oh, no, that's not good. But the fact that she survives is like, okay, they can make new memories. And mood photos, which is nice. But it was one thing I definitely thought of when he just, like, tucks in the photo into the plane.
Mm-hmm.
It
almost feels like him being like, your soul was here with me when I took, like, I avenged you sort of thing, which is so brutal and rough. Like, this guy really fucking goes through it. And then we get a little cut where we see Godzilla regenerating as he sinks into the ocean.
Yeah, he'll be back in some movie. Will be sequel to this? Who can say?
Can I say? I kind of fucking hope not. I've already said I don't really like the Shin connection to this, if it does exist, if it doesn't exist, whatever. But, like, that is such a powerful... Like, again, I view this as a movie about having to deal with the trauma of absolute ruination after an event like a war or, like, mass destruction. Something interesting, and I guess you can or cannot, as with any piece of, you know, narrative fiction, judge things based on the author's input, death of the author, all that shit or whatever. But, like, this movie was specifically the first Godzilla production made with the COVID-19 pandemic and the response to it in mind. And the director is out there saying that. Like, this is a movie about COVID and how the world's dealt with it.
I actually didn't know the COVID angle. I mean, I guess it makes sense, but, like, you know.
Yeah. I didn't know about it till after I had seen the movie, and I think it makes sense, but, like, it's... it is so much about World War II to me that I'm just like, that feels tertiary almost to what this movie's interested in.
I mean, I can also see how, like, oh wow, the Japanese and American governments don't care enough for other people to actually do about the virus is a...
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But I... fuck, where was I going? No, I... Like, that final bit with Godzilla regenerating is, like, it's so obvious, like, to, like... That's so obviously easy to be read as, like, oh, we can set this up for more movies if this does well.
Like the ending of Shin Godzilla.
Yes.
I feel like maybe it's just, like, they kind of felt they had to just, like, pull Hulk in.
Yeah. I mean, they always,
at,
you know.
At most, I can be like, well, he'll just be back in Shin Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been funny if they went to be continued in Shin Godzilla, which would have been really cringe for me, but yeah.
I kind of like it, though, just as a scene, like, as a final ending epilogue point on its own, because what it's also showing, though, too, is, like, even though these people are happy, that, like, that trauma, that fear, that risk of everything you know falling apart and the world completely changing in an apocalyptic way, that weight is still there. Like, you never fully can get rid of that, because that's what humanity is capable of. That's what the world is capable of. And they're just like, fuck, what a cruel, uncomfortable reminder that, like, is so powerful at the end of that, like, because we go from them, you know, being finally together again as a family after so much to that dark shadow lingering, tucked away in the dark corner of the world. But yeah, I fucking love this movie. I like I said, I got, like, teary-eyed watching this. Like, I think the peak of kaiju movie watching experiences that I've ever had. And I'm curious as I get deeper into the genre, if there's anything that offers the same level of, like, human drama in a way that resonates with me as deeply as this. I hope so. I hope there's other stuff, like, out here, but, remember, like, this feels like a cut above.
Like, I remember enjoying Shin Godzilla, but I also don't know if I cared.
Tell you a character. Yeah. I couldn't tell you any of their names. And these are people that stuck with me.
Shin Godzilla is more of a bureaucratic drama than a human drama.
Exactly. Like, and I think that works, but I think this is better. Like,
the suspense of Shin Godzilla is, like, on more on a societal level in a way than, like, on a human person level.
Yeah. And that is a parallel this movie loves to point out with how, you know, the government responds in this movie.
Shin Godzilla does not have guys like Shin Ultraman. You do not see characters of Shin Godzilla acting out their roles in air conditioning commercials.
See, now I'm like, what the fuck do they do to follow this up? You know, like, they're on a roll here of movies that are interested in different angles of crisis response.
And then there's the Ken Arashibuchi movies.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't select them when I haven't seen them, but, you know.
I have a feeling, though, also, too, the people at Toho are thinking of those as... I don't think they're viewing those as, like, main tentpole.
I just separate them because, like, yeah, they're, like, a trilogy of anime movies that you feel separate, but also they are counting them as the fifth A-Rod movie. I don't know, it feels weird.
They are, but also that might just also be them being nice. You know, like, did those get theatrical drops in Japan?
I think they did.
Okay. I can kind of see that more then, too.
But... Yeah, but I mean, I guess they also just being completionist. Like, you're not going to say that the movies you made aren't movies.
Yes, exactly. Whew. But yeah, I think that this was a fucking masterpiece. This is absolutely the best movie I saw in theaters this year.
Better than Shin Ultraman? Yeah, I think it's better than Shin Ultraman.
Oh, yeah, blows Shin Ultraman. Honestly, blows the entire Shin trilogy out of the water for me.
I didn't talk about Shin Kamen Rider much. I don't think I care about the movie the more I did distance from it.
I think it's the weakest one of those
three. It is the weakest one, but I think even like I just don't think it's that good. I don't like it. It's just a mess. There's no guys in there.
There are parts of it that I disagree. I like Hayato a lot.
I mean, I guess I don't think I like Hayato. Wait, not Hayato. Fuck.
Isn't it just Hayato?
Yeah, Hayato Ichimonji, right?
Yeah.
Okay, number two. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
He's fun, but everyone else is kind of like, whatever. I felt it was cringe when he was like, "I made Utopia." He's like, "No, Dystopia." I'm like, okay. Cool. it's like, yeah. I don't get it. Maybe I'd appreciate it a bit more if I actually watched original Kamen Rider, but also I'm like, I didn't need to watch original Ultraman to like Shin Ultraman. Even if it made my appreciation stronger in hindsight. But, you know.
I also feel like Shin Kamen Rider is the one that's most divorced from its original stuff as an as a reboot / adaptation, like, you know, spiritual remake sort of
thing. Yeah, I mean, he's recreating his shots one to one, but like, you know,
the actual story and that world is very different.
Yeah. For some reason, the Ishinomori hero in Azuma Man, as she referenced. Also, Detective Robot Keiji is there. I thought those were cute, but I was also like, you can't make a movie just based off references. This isn't an epic movie.
Looks directly at Anno. What do you mean you can't make a movie? What do you mean you can't tell a story just by referencing things?
Can't believe I compared Anno to like fucking Scary Movie. the worst thing I could say about him, just like Slender. The robot chicken of Japanese creation. That's such a mean thing.
Oh, that fuck is just straight for the fucking throat. She won. Did you hear that, audience? Straight for the throat. Do you have any other closing thoughts here?
I don't know. Which
I think I'm gonna think about every time I think about Godzilla now. I think I am going like this is going to be just like this opened up my brain and injected its view of Godzilla permanently, I think, into my skull. I will not be able to think of this creature without thinking of minus one's depiction, I think forever now. This is a fucking
beautiful
movie. Yeah.
Not to be confused with Zilla, the retroactive name for Godzilla in the US version of the 1999 Godzilla movie. Because Toho got so mad at that movie that they retroactively bought the rights and renamed it to Zilla.
I will say that Chibi Godzilla Raids Again still clears. Jun Fukuyama is still the most powerful and greatest Godzilla on screen.
Did you know that the first... I don't know if it's the first, but there's... In 2023, you can play a fighting game on Steam right now that has Ultraman and Godzilla in it, and that's funny.
Yeah, I saw that. That's cool. That's fun.
I say funny, but I meant cool. It's cool to exist. There's, like, surprisingly little crossover between those two things.
One day I am going to play that Disaster Report spinoff game that's just Ultraman, Godzilla, Evangelion, and Pat Labor.
Yeah, Pat Labor for some reason.
I will be spoiling some Ultraman stuff for myself because of that, but I don't care. That's the one thing I'm giving myself a pass on.
As long as you don't have contacts and can't go, whoa, what's that?
Yeah, I might also play some of those dumb Compatty Hero games where Godzilla and the Gundam F91 decide they want to play soccer, which is very fucking funny. And also the Ultra guys are there. But yeah, that's Godzilla minus one. But you know what? It isn't minus. It's Godzilla plus fun, if I do say so myself.
I rate your joke minus one out of five stars.
Listen, I was LARPing as a Letterboxd user.
Well, you see, I don't read Letterboxd.
Good. I don't like Letterboxd. I've never had an account, but I just There's recently people pointing out that, like, the "This Happened to My Buddy Eric" review, while funny, did somewhat ruin the culture of Letterboxd, and I'm just like, yeah, I could have told you that a few years ago.
I think it's funny that the movie called it minus one instead of zero, like many do.
Yeah. Also, that being said, Red's "This Happened to My Buddy Elric" joke still extremely funny.
I don't even know anything about Elric. I just listen to you talk about it and go, okay.
He's a weird little twisted man with a talking sword that goads him into doing bad things.
That reminds me, because of Shelf by Genre and me going through Book of the New Sun, I'm still like halfway through Endymion, the book that follows up followed by Hyrion.
I've been listening to the Shelved by Genre Patreon stuff a lot.
I haven't listened to their Patreon stuff. I should do that.
Oh, you should. This is completely off topic now, but their episode going through the D&D Monster Manual is fucking incredible. It's a great time. And also they did one recently talking about Caves of Cud, which is a game that I need to play more of, but I've liked a lot the times I have
engaged with it. I know they did a bonus episode on The Inkle, which is a graphic novel I feel like I should read at some point.
Same. I've owned a good copy of that for a while because I bought it after Jodorowsky's Dune was a thing. So
yeah, he sure didn't actually want to make Dune.
That movie is so, or that documentary is so fucking incredible because it's just him going, "Then I had this other idea and I called some people. That I spent a lot of money," and it's like, yeah, oh, Jesus Christ, like, where's this going?
You don't need to do a one-to-one accurate adaptation of a thing, but you should at least, like, read the source material. You should probably have Paul Atreides actually there.
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool if Shelby Genre one day did Dune, but they don't have to do it now. I think it'd just be interesting to hear them talk about it, and I revisit it that way. How far are you in Book of the New Sun, anyway?
Not very.
Oh, I'm caught up basically to the podcast. So I'm gonna finish Citadel of the Altar probably next week, because that's when the last episode comes out for that book. Severian's a funny guy. He sucks.
I've only read a few pages, but he is very funny.
Also, Gene Wolfe, very much the spiritual successor to A.G. Tsuburaya.
Weird Christian worldview.
Catholic specifically.
Catholic, yeah.
Very, very into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Very much framing his entire sci-fi worldview. Also doesn't like communists, which I don't think is the...
Oh, I was going to say he just liked me for real, but that last part lost me.
Yeah.
I have not been Catholic for many years now.
He has his own 12, fictional anti-communist stand-in civilization.
Oh, and my very God. Goofy
and cringe.
I can't wait to get there. You ever read that thing where the Pope declared one time, like, you can't be a member of the Catholic Church and also be communist?
I do
it's
know
like an official there's like an official decree.
I do know the church was involved in Operation Gladio.
It's a very silly read. I highly recommend it. That was one thing I discovered when I was in my period of, like, yeah, I don't think I believe this anymore, and also I'm getting further to the left, where I just read that and I was just like, oh, this whole thing is absolutely horseshit. But yeah.
Yeah.
Well, enough about that fun stuff. Godzilla Minus One is great. Go watch it.
In theaters now, but wear a mask.
Probably not when this comes out. We'll see. I don't know how late the theater things are showing, but it'll be out eventually at some point for you to watch, and I highly recommend you do so.
Yeah.
But seeing it in the theater did kick ass.
You maybe have to fish in the high seas, but, you know, there are ways.
Yeah. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Oh, wait, should we do plugs?
Yeah, I guess. So actually, yeah, because I'm also probably going to put out this full episode just on my YouTube, just to give people a little taste of a full Ultra Q episode. But,
minus one of us.
Yes, minus one of us. True. Our friend Red is not here.
By the way, if you're on Razin's channel, one, he's going to direct you to the Ultra Q YouTube page anyway, but also we had a Halloween stream thing.
Yeah, if you want to watch me and Mel fight it out in Vampire Survivors.
Yeah, no,
Savior. You can go ahead and go to the Ultra Q YouTube channel, which is going to be linked in the description, and you can find all of our podcasts and stuff there. And also, obviously, we're in all the usual podcast places.
Yeah,
if you want to subscribe to us as an RSS feed.
Notably for the Halloween thing, that's a special video version, but like there's an audio version as well. Just, you know, you can't watch us play the game. Not on YouTube. But yeah, you can, if you want to follow the pod, we're at Ultra Q on Twitter, Ultra_Q, that's Ultra Q, Q-U-E-U-E. I think I was trying to copy Red there, but I don't think it worked out.
That's fine. They'll find us.
Yeah. Link in the description anyway. We got an email, ultrapod@gmail.com. I guess you want to follow me on Twitter, there's @DearCrowns. I'm also on Blue Sky. That's it for my plugs. I mean, I guess I have my Twitch, but like you can find that on my Twitter anyway. I'm not like a real streamer. I just like do it sometimes for fun.
Yeah, and you can find me at Rosenbrand, which, you know, depending on where you're finding this, you might already be there. But if you're finding this through our usual channels, you know, that's at Rosenbrand, that's RASENBRAN. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Blue Sky, I'm on Co-host, I'm on YouTube, obviously. And I started my Elden Ring Let's Play back up, so that's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this on Rosen's channel, maybe subscribe to the podcast and listen to it, and watch Ultra Man.
Yeah.
We're finally getting to restart our coverage on Return to Ultraman.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it then. Have a good night, everyone.
Yeah.
That was my Godzilla.
My recording is finally over.
True.